Good morning, honorable members. Good morning.
Morning.
I can morning, see that, Chair. Morning. I think we are more than four or five. Morning. Can we start with our meeting?
Yes, morning, Chair.
Morning. Thank you very much, honorable members, for joining this meeting. You're welcome, all of you, including the support team that is amongst us. Can I request that Sabelo, can you flag the agenda? There is the proposal for the agenda, honorable members. Let me start by saying that this meeting was not scheduled in terms of the program, but we realized that there are outstanding matters that we should adopt as a committee so that we give space for other things to do, because the parliamentary program was extended even for this week. So there's the proposal of, for the agenda. Before we we go to the adoption of the agenda, I will now invite honorable members to observe a moment of silence for meditation or prayer. Thank you very much. Can I get the mover for the adoption of the agenda?
Adopt, Chairperson.
Honorable Butters, move for the adoption. Can we get seconder?
I second, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Masuta. Seconded. can we then note, let me give an apology for Collis, why she's not well. Sabelo will be standing for her. Sabelo, can we get apologies?
Morning, Honorable Chairperson and members. There are no apologies, Chair.
Okay, thank you very much. the fourth item is the consideration of
sorry,
the adoption. Yes?
Dr. Kumalo has raised their hand.
Okay.
Good morning, colleagues. I'm sure maybe there isn't space in the program, Chair, but I just wanted to take a brief opportunity during the apologies to say thank you for the support during my time of bereavement. I appreciate the thoughts and prayers as well as what was sent to the family from the committee. I really, really appreciate it.
Thank you, Doctor. Thank you very much. And we We appreciate that you are back. You are back being very strong, and welcome back. And we know that healing is not one thing, it's a process. We can just encourage you to take it easy on yourself. And when you think you still need to cry, that's part of healing. And we welcome you back. Thank you very much. Maybe just to indicate that from the office, our office, we had sent flowers on behalf of the committee. During the bereavement of a doctor and his family, just to send our condolences on behalf of the committee. Can we then go to item number 4?
Okay, Chair.
Yes, consideration of the adoption of the committee report on the World Urban Forum. Mr. Bello?
Yes, Chair. I'm putting it up. Just a minute, Chairperson. Okay, honorable members,
recording in progress.
This is the draft report on the participation and attendance on the World Urban Forum that took place on 30th June 22 in Katowice in Poland. So the draft report was sent to members about 4 days ago. So if with your permission, Chair, we'll go page by page if there are corrections that need to be raised, then they'll be raised. So this is page number one. It talks about the attendance and the background for the invitation.
Proceed, Sabelo.
Okay.
Just present the overall, and then members will speak later.
Okay. So this was a conference of the World Urban Forum, and the main theme was transforming our cities for a better urban culture. And it seeks to provide greater insight and clarity on the future of cities based on existing trends, challenges, and opportunities. So the forum was divided into key thematic areas. Those were urban crisis and urban recovery, equitable urban future, greener urban futures, innovation and technology, building urban resilience, and urban planning and governance, future urban economy and finance. And then there were six key findings. The first one was humanity's future is untouchably urban, and the COVID-19 pandemic had a big impact on resolving issues of poverty, and adoption of the 15-minute city concept, underlying principles in the daily needs were close at hand in every neighborhood, and informal employment needs to be supported, not punished, and vision for an optimistic future of cities must embody a new social compact. Climate change and environmental concern increasingly dominate future scenarios. And then the closing ceremony, participants of the United Nations it was recommended that they play an active participation in UN agency and advisory group, and the various sessions highlighting the key concern around climate development and migration. Okay, report to be considered, Chair.
Attached, I think there is a declaration of the conference on the mail that was sent to members. Can we then get hands to talk to the report? And I'm told Kolisa has joined us, though she's not well. She cannot speak very well because she's got tonsils. We had agreed that she must not attend, but she has attended. Can I get members to talk to the report?
Recording in progress.
I'll switch off the other gadget, the one that is making us.
Thank you, Chair, and good morning. Chair, I think the summary is welcomed. The only area that I think we need to add, in my view, we go to the world forums to learn and bring back for a possible implementation in our locality. So the issue of urban cities or new cities. It's something that we need to have a discussion in our country. I think it could be linked to what the president said of smart cities. So I don't know how to phrase it, but I think there must be a statement that says, as parliamentarians, we would like to take this experience to our cities for further engagement to develop new cities that are responding to renewables and that kind of the new cities that we could have where there are pavements, people to walk, the streets, integrated transports, you know, that kind of vibrance in a city. A city that is awake for 24 hours. I think the English people, Savile and them, can phrase what I'm saying, Chair. Thank you, but I welcome and accept it. Thanks. Bye.
Thank you, Honorable Butters. Any second?
Yes, my hand is up, Chair. I just wanted to find out if there was a way we could maybe get access to information and ideas and all that the delegation had learned, maybe for us to also just take some learnings from what was, learned by the team that the delegation that went over. I'm not sure if there's a chance that we can see what was discussed, what the discussions were, and what learnings we can also take from yourselves as the delegation that went.
Thank you, Doctor. I think it's the proposal it's acceptable, and there is I think even the there is a website of the conference itself and documents. I think we should actually package that and circulate to members. Honorable Masuta.
Thanks. I don't know if Sabelo could flag the key strategic challenges that face urbanization globally that the delegation found to be resonant with our context in South Africa. In particular, I'm keen to know how issues of a spatial integration, if it came up in the deliberations, was dealt with in the context of such issues, which in other countries is characterized as gentrification, which is a class issue, where the poor up cities and basically are cleansing themselves of poverty by elevating
your network is very
cost of living in urban centers so that which said again. So I'm very unfortunate with this committee. Whenever it's time for me to speak, there's load shedding and it affects network. And it's made it very difficult for me to contribute to the work of the committee. Unfortunately, I have no control. Chair, am I still audible or should I abandon my contribution?
I could hear you and on other parts, but the other part was so we weren't able to hear what you're saying.
Well, let me try again, and if it doesn't work, I'll just abandon and just accept that load shedding is the reality, the norm, which disrupts the ability for people to really participate meaningfully in the business of the day. I'll just abandon my effort like last time. Am I still audible?
Yeah, but there's still that funny sound. Proceed, Honorable Masuta.
Yes, as I was saying...
Where you are seated, please don't move or don't shift. Now we can hear you clearly.
Yes. The problem is not where I'm seated. The problem is that the network in the area is off, load shedding, so the network becomes weak. So there isn't much that can be done until the load shedding has ended. It's try, and if it doesn't work out, it's making sense because of the breakage. Hello? Now I've lost your voice. I think I'll just listen in and not participate in the meeting, because clearly until the load shedding ends, it won't work from my side. I hope you're hearing me.
Yes, I can hear you. That's why I was saying whether it's the spot where you are seated, or because at some point we can hear you clearly. I'm not sure with other members.
Yes, I'm sitting at exactly the same spot. I don't even move my gadget. The issue is not location. The issue is load shedding. Once there's load shedding, the network becomes unstable. So when it's unstable, there's breakage in communication. It's consistent like that. That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Can I suggest, Honorable Masuta, that after the we've circulated all the documents that were at the conference to members, then we can then maybe in the one day we'll then put, as Seki proposed, that we come back and discuss. Then those that were in that meeting would then be able to lead the discussion in terms of what other countries were raising in terms of their challenges around the or their how they've mastered to manage to build proper cities like where we were holding the conference, it was you could see that everything that is required in terms of the city, you have. So can I propose that, Honorable Masuta?
Yeah, no, whatever has been proposed, it's fine. I just thought there was a report that was presented for discussion, and yes, I was trying to make a contribution, but obviously the communication network is failing me. I believe that having lived in more than one inner cities and having observed over a period of time fundamental changes in the social structure underpinning some of those changes in inner cities, there were specific issues I wanted to raise. I've lived in the inner city of Johannesburg, for example, for well over a decade, and I've observed radical social change. And I believed that there are issues that this committee should be seized with around, you know, radical positive or negative changes that appear in cities and how we respond strategically to those changes. That would have been my theme, but since we have difficulty of communication, I think I'll just defer until a better opportunity arises. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Masuta. Honorable Tologelo Malachi, and then followed by Honorable Chris Malamaji. Doctor, your hand is still up.
Legacy hand, Chair. I'll put it down.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think we had a progressive conference. Those that of some of us have had an opportunity to form part, and I think the report reflects most of the things that we have dealt with. Obviously, I agree with those that we need to find time to give more meat. But I'll second the adoption of the report.
Thank you, Mr. Malimaza.
No, thanks, Chair. I'm fine. I was to second the proposal that we be offered an opportunity to go through the report. I think it's very good, interesting, well-informed, to can assist. I have no problem. Now that it's been seconded for adoption, it's fine. We will hear from the offices. When will you arrange that so that we share an input wherever we can put? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. There was a second. Honorable Malachi was part of the delegation. Thank you very much. Can we go to the next item?
Honorable members, this is the draft report on the attendance of the Indaba, the human settlements Indaba, which was held on the 4th to 5th September 2022 in Itheku in KwaZulu-Natal. The theme of the Indaba was transforming human settlements environment through accelerated planning, implementation, and public-private partnership. And this was it was also aimed to mobilize private sector, academia, NGOs, and traditional leaders to partner with government in creating sustainable human settlements across the country. And the delegation was the chairperson and four members, which is Honorable Malachi, Kumalo, Chafeni and the content advisor Sabelo Mngoni. So the indaba was divided into key focus areas, which is planning and development, compliance and regulation, finance and transformation, and the entrenching empowerment and transformation in the delivery chain. These focus areas were facilitated by human settlements entities, and they aimed to address the following: the unlocking opportunities to accelerate sustainable human settlements development, quality assurance within the changing landscape of human settlement sector, upscaling and sustainability of human settlements, and unlocking opportunities to accelerate sustainability of PRA transformation agenda. And then during the conference, the acting director general informed the delegation of the principles of the social compact, which was followed by a post in the roadmap. And then in the closing, the minister indicated that the entities would be busy with consolidating the report, and the report will be presented at MINMEC and also at the portfolio committee. The report to be considered, Chair. Chairperson?
Yes, Sabelo, thank you. Can I get the input from members? I have Honorable Mark Masuta, Honorable Butters, Honorable Malaj.
Am I audible?
Yes, Honorable Masuta.
Yes. In the same vein, Chair, I'd still want to lift, I hear the strategic issues that were covered, which are most appreciated and relevant to our space. But I would still feel that the particular issue of social class and how it impacts on this and strategic planning in so urban centers is an issue which I would be keen as to how it was dealt with. So it links to the question of gentrification, as well as the issue of using urban centers for densification as opposed to gentrification, given issues of availability, population groups, increasingly space becomes less available and less costly and more costly to acquire for purposes of human settlement. I do not know whether models have been presented from different jurisdictions. I've seen the Chinese, for example, ramping up densification in order to accommodate large numbers of people in small land portions or special spaces as a way of addressing questions of access to opportunities in urban centers, general development, and related issues, which I believe are challenges that confront us as a country as we speak. How do we shift from the trend or rebuff the trend of the proliferation of informal settlements by ramping up special planning preemptively in order to avoid a situation of self-help based on desperation because people are moving ahead of our strategic policy planning and how other countries have been able to manage this. I would be curious to know how some of these issues were dealt with. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Malachi, we've lost
Thanks, Chair. I think on the areas, of course, those that have attended, I don't know if, I think Honorable Chris was part of the delegation. Yeah, but apart from those amendments, I move for adoption of the report.
I didn't hear part, the first part. I just had the the issue of the Honorable Malimas attending the. I think. Sabe Law, the other issue that we need to get it from attached to this report should be the declaration itself, because now there was a declaration. And the, yeah. Or maybe we can we'll wait for the, because there was an agreement that the report should be tabled to the MINMEC first and then adopted by cabinet. Then it will then be circulated. We'll then come back to it. but I just thought the declaration might be important for. Members. Honorable Malachi has moved for the adoption. Can I get seconders?
Second, Chair.
Honorable Kumalo, second the report. Thank you very much. Go to the next item.
Sabelo? Yes, Chair.
the program, Sabelo.
Okay, sir. Chairperson, can you see the program?
Yes, Sabelo. There is a program for the fourth term. Our focus will be on the RRR. The first day of the of the 12th of October, when we come back from the oversight, we'll then be dealing with the RRR. Fortunately, our department has tabled their annual report and all the entities. So I think we just have to amend time. The time that we're giving for Auditor General is too little. We'll have to increase it, and then the the planning and monitoring, and later we'll then meet with the department. And then on Friday, we're proposing that we are going to request for Friday, because if we don't do that, we might not finalize the the RRR before Minister of Finance is presenting the MTEBFS. Yeah? Did I call it correctly? Medium term framework which is in October, and then we then propose that we should request some Fridays to be able to be within the prescribed time as required by the by Parliament, so that our report can then be tabled before that, as I've indicated, and then on Wednesday, October, then we'll meet with the other three entities, and then I suggest that because it will be a committee week, we should add those provinces that were they would have been mentioned by the Auditor General. Their findings around the issues with the, from Auditor General, so that we can then spend the Wednesday of the 19th, if it's still a committee week. Usually we're given 2 weeks. Then on Friday, then we then consider and adopt the report. And then on the 26th of October, as we have agreed in one meeting that we need to invite Metro Municipality, our suggestion is that we'll then on the 26th, we'll then have meetings with the metros, those metros as identified, and then there is a proposal that on the 27th, 29th, there is a petition on the complaint of Vembe district, which was speaker has referred to three committees which were part, and there is a proposal that on Thursday, 29, there must be a visit to that area to talk to stakeholders. And then on the coming Wednesday, on the 2nd of November, we then take the last Netros, and then on the 6th to the 4th, and then we go to Northwest for public hearing. And then on that day, on Friday the 5th, when we are at Northwest, we'll utilize the evening to meet with the Ramkua petitioners and with the city of Tshwane and Gauteng and National Department. And then on the 9th of November, we're suggesting that we must actually have a department to come and present the strategy on to deal with the title deed. It will be an interactive discussion. how do we facilitate the strategy, the issuing of title deed to communities? And then on the 16th of November, which will be my birthday, there is a proposal that we should have a discussion on starting the discussion on the bill itself. On the 13th to the 11th to the 13th, we'll have the last public hearing in Western Cape. And then 16th November, we then take the organization that they've submitted their input on the bill through the advert that was made on the bill. And then on the 18th of November, we continue with we get the response on the issues affecting the bill from the department, the ones that members would actually identify, and those that have been identified even during the discussion that we have with the department. And on the 23rd of November, then we go into the formal stage of reading clause by clause, and the committee deliberate on the bill and take it public submission and response into account, clause by clause deliberation and proposed amendment by the committee. And then on the 24th of November, then the formal stage, reading clause by clause, the committee deliberate on the bill, taking again, because they will be sitting, we believe that if we are not done, we can still proceed because we will have half days to deal with those issues. And then on the 9th, then we'll then deal with the A list, which is part of the process of the bid itself. And then on the 2nd of December, then the B version of the bill will be presented and for adoption by the committee. Can we scroll it down now? And that is the proposal of the program. You know, it's, and there is a, we received the invitation from the department on the, they are hosting the UN again as part of the implementation of the what they've agreed on the on the commitment that they've made at the conference on the issues of informal settlement, which is the 16th and the 17th, I think, of October. So we have made application so that members can, those that are available can then be part of those discussion and understand better how the world and the national government are intended to deal with the issues of informal settlement. That is the program, honorable members. Can we get the reaction from the program? Honorable Emma Powell, can I get another hand? Honorable Emma?
Chatting and the signal's bad, so I hope you can hear me. Just a few points. That latest point that you raised, the UN resolutions, where will that take place? That via Zoom. Secondly, about 2 terms ago when the committee adopted, when our committee adopted the report on recommendations related to the stabilization of the Housing Development Agency, one of the recommendations contained in our committee report was that we receive quarterly reports on the stabilization and turnaround plan of the HDA. This past term, we haven't had a meeting on that issue, and I note that we are not going to be deliberating on that in the fourth term either. So can I just have your response about how we plan on implementing our own resolution in that respect? Then I am really glad to see that we've got these meetings on the USTG expenditure scheduled, obviously also noting that we'll be able to get the fourth quarter final reports on expenditure from these metropolitans. We had met physically with the various provinces on the issue of the block project. I know that costs might be an issue, but it might be an idea for us to also physically meet with these respective MMCs and executive directors from the relevant municipalities. Then In regards to the issue on the agenda that the National Department of Human Settlements is going to respond to the issues that were raised during the public hearings, I think that it might be an idea for us to include or to invite COGSA to that meeting, because a lot of the issues that were raised during the public hearings were with respect to the competencies, the constitutional competencies of municipalities, so a lot of the district and local municipalities. And I think that the department, the national department, may be hamstrung in their ability to respond from a municipal perspective. So perhaps if we could get COGTA in the room, that might assist. And then lastly, Chairperson, and most importantly, I sent you an email a number of weeks ago. It was before the start of the third term, asking that our committee have an urgent deliberation with the National Minister of Human Settlements on the crisis of land invasions. It's an issue that keeps coming up in almost every committee meeting. And as a committee member, I'm within my right to request that we deliberate on an issue, as is any member. I'm concerned to see that, again, that issue is not reflecting, time has not been made for that discussion in the upcoming term. Can I have your undertaking as to when we will be able to schedule such a discussion? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Powell. Can I get any other input before I talk to, so that I must respond on issues or all of them? Honorable Seki.
Chair, I always approach the program as a flexible program, because there may be issues that would need to change, and I accept it as a base for us to work. The only comment that I want to add is on the invitations of the metros. That on the invitations of the metros, yes, I see it's about how they utilize the USDG. I'm not sure whether that will be inclusive of the issues of this issue that we always talk about, Chair, managing the beneficiaries, where there's been allegations that councillors comes in and leave the other previous list that was there, and generally how as metros manages the issues of beneficiary list, and as metros, how do they respond to the grievance of people, like where a house is not well built, their relationships with the NHBRC. You know, the experience that we have gone through, Chair, it's so broad in relation to the activism of these metros and municipality at large. So if that question of the USDG will allow us to ask those questions, I'm fine, Chair. Or you put, like what you did last, when we're inviting provinces, you had a template of saying, this is issues that I would want the provinces to talk to. Maybe we could do the same with the metros, not to have this blanket agenda, but under it to have specifications like the issues that I've raised. On what your member Powell is raising, Chair, I think Member Powell must not accuse us of not getting a report of the HDA in the previous 3 months. Indeed, it was agreed that from time to time we'll get a report. There's nothing wrong for Member Powell to remind the chairperson to say, Chair, can we get the latest on the development of the HDA? Not to make as if there's something that we are hiding. It's a decision of the committee that will get reports from time to time. And then on quarterly reports, when the department comes, there's nothing wrong for us to ask that question if it's not on the agenda. And then if it's not there, the department can further send us a report if they were not, it was not part of their report when they present to us. So Member Powell, that is an open debate, and that has no constraints in us getting that information. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Becky. One on the issue of the HDA, as Honorable Powell, we are going to meet with HDA. As part of the annual report, they are there on the agenda. And the annual report actually tells us, actually explains us even better to members whether SDA was able to stabilize, was being able to be stabilized, because the annual report talks to the issues of SDA, and SDA, the board, and the executive of the HDA would be coming to, if you go to go up, on the program, Sabelo, on the Wednesday, on one Wednesday, where we're going to, as part of the discussion on the BRRR, and the annual report, department and its entity will be explaining how did they implemented the program. Honorable Masuta, can you switch off your mic? How they were able to implement the program of their department for that financial year. So those issues can still be discussed if we feel that because the Auditor General is going to even to help us to understand whether indeed what the HDA was saying they are doing, whether they were able to do it, and will then be able to take a decision, proper decision, with the informed insight of the annual report. The second issue on informal settlement meeting is going to, I think it's going to be held in Johannesburg. I don't have the letter with me, whether it's in Beachwood or Colliso can just write the message on the chat so that members can see where it's going to be held. The third issue in terms of the metro, that the proposal to meet with metros in the physically, I think personally I don't have an issue on it. It will be helpful for members if it's going to be helpful for members. I think the meeting can agree. On the last one, on the issue of invasion, Honorable Powell, you are correct. That is an important discussion that we needed to have. But if you look at what we have done, we have prioritized the issues that affect the BRRR and the bill itself, because our view is that with the bill itself, we should have much more time. We should finalize the bill so that by this year, so that we give enough time for NCOP to take their processes without any pressure. Because this is Section 76 bill, and if we want, if our interest, all of us, is to see this bill being adopted by Parliament with the inclusive of NCOP, we should then agree that they needed the enough time for them to do the processes that we have done ourselves. that is why we are proposing that we must finalize a bill so that next year would have enough time to look at other issues. The issue that of invasion, I think we'll start with the discussion when we meet with metros. Let's start there to understand what is the problem with the metros. Why are they not implementing the legislation as they put forth as enacted, and then we'll then understand what are the challenges. At the time we call the minister, we'll then all of us will have a clear understanding of what is the problem, why the municipalities are not actually acting within the legislation of making sure that they stop that land invasion. Whether it's the issues of capacity, because most of metros, they've got more budget than provinces. It cannot be only the issue of the budget. So that we'll have those understanding. And then when we have that discussion, and there was the proposal on the committee, which we thought would put it in the next on the workshop that we have agreed that we needed to have the workshop around issues of housing. What are the bottlenecks that are existing in the system for us to be able to provide, of course, through department, a sustainable human settlement in the country, which will include land invasion, all the issues that affect the provision of houses having integrated human communities in the country. So that is still there in the system. In the we've packed it, but we have to, in terms of the law, we have to prioritize the BRRR. We cannot postpone that. It's the requirement of the law. So those are the issues, honorable members. I see there is honorable Powell and honorable Brett Heron.
Thanks, Chair. Thank you for the responses. My battery's on 5%, so it may die. I just wanted to say that in respect of the HDA stabilization plan and the report that was adopted by this committee, we're currently in dereliction of our own undertakings as a committee. So I would like to say that is a statutory requirement of this committee. And we did, as a committee, take an undertaking on how frequently we would need to receive stabilization reports from the entity, which we haven't done. So our committee is going to need to adopt a revised report in terms of our original undertakings, because it wasn't, as Honourable Teki said, a decision to from time to time. We had in the actual report itself inserted a specific time period, which was agreed to by the committee at the time. So Bella can pull that report up for us. My concern is that our committee has not performed the function that it itself undertook to perform. Thank you, Chair.
But you are not telling the truth, Honorable Power. The decision was taken in the last quarter. We've met with HDA. I'm saying we're going to meet with the HDA this coming quarter, which is this, we said the quarter. And I'm saying The HDA would be dealing with the annual report. But in the process of the annual report, then the committee would then be able to assess whether there has been that stabilization in the HDA. Honorable Heron.
Thanks, Chair. Chair, you can guide me if this request is out of order, but I've been wanting to ask the committee to deal with or to get a report at some time in the future, and maybe it's, there's no time in this fourth quarter program, but on the work of the policy and legal review teams, that the, I don't know if the, I mean, I'm new to the committee, so I don't know if the committee's already received the outcome of the pilot's work. The pilot was established in October 2018 to review the housing code and the policy frameworks for developing human settlements in South Africa. The team was disbanded in October 2021. And I'm not sure if the committee has ever received a report on the outcome of that work and what progress was made. And if we can schedule it at some point.
I think your proposal is welcome, Honorable Heron. I think Sabelo probably is noting as because we is going to present the APP that for next financial year, which will then be able to put the proposal as you put, Honorable Heron. I think you're welcome on your input. Honorable Seki has moved for the adoption of the program. Can I get the seconder?
Yeah, I second.
Honorable Heron second. Thank you very much. The program would be as indicated in the next term. can we then go to the last item on the agenda, which is the strategic, the review of strategic plan or and the APP for 2022-23. Hello.
Yes, Chair. Okay, honourable members. So, with regards to the street plan, it is discussed in the
Sabelo.
Following. Yes, Chair.
Sabelo, you have not put anything on the script. I think we have jumped the minutes. Sorry, this minute has been going forth and back. Can I get members to adopt the minutes in terms of the program before we go into the strat plan and the APP? In the last meeting, we didn't have the quorum to adopt the minutes, and that minutes of the 25th of August, I think. In the other meeting, there was no seconders. And maybe members must indicate whether is it the right, if people think the meeting, or 25th of May. can we then get the mover for the adoption of the minutes? What is the problem with the minutes, honorable members? It may be
There was a specific item that I think had some arguments. I can't remember it. What is it? So if that matter is clarified, Chair, maybe you can guide us and then we can adopt the minutes.
That's
what I'm saying. I can't remember, but there was an argument in the previous. That's why these minutes could not be adopted. And we referred them back for them to be reworked. So just that.
The minutes, because the Coliseum was not there, and they asked the intent to take the minutes. And the committee said the minutes should go back to be reworked. And the minutes, when we were taken back and reworked, was tabled in the one meeting. And there was no second. Honorable Sufai proposed the adoption. There was no second. And then we then said that it must, the minutes must go back. We bring the minutes back, but the day we are supposed to adopt it, there was no quorum. We have lost members because of the load shedding.
Honorable
Mokutu.
Oh, I was just requesting that Sabelo scroll back to the roll call so that one can be able to see it. Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson.
Okay. Honorable Power.
No, it's fine. I was going to ask the same thing, that the committee secretary take us through the minutes.
Again. Okay.
I think she's saying she wanted to see the roll call. On that note, Chair, I want to propose adoption of these minutes.
The minutes has been proposed. There is a proposal for the adoption. Can we get seconded?
Chairperson, I've asked if we can go through the minutes. Has that been overruled?
Oh, you want to go again through the minutes, but you had this minute.
No, well, it was just that all of the members were not, I was in the meeting, but we didn't have quorum. So there will be a lot of members that are on this meeting now that have not gone through the meeting. So that's why, because we didn't actually have a quorum. So that's why I request that we go through them now.
Sabelo, can you take us through the minutes?
Okay, Chair. Opening and welcome. The committee secretary opened the meeting and welcome all in present. She requested members and guests to observe a moment of silence for meditation or prayer. She then presided over the election of the acting chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlements as stipulated in Rules 159 of the Rules of the National Assembly. Honorable Sehlwayi seconded by Honorable Tseki, nominated Malachi as the acting chairperson. Honorable Malachi accepted the nomination and presided over the meeting. Mr. Malachi, the acting chairperson, welcomed members and the delegation from the SIU. The chairperson requested all to observe a moment of silence for prayer or meditation. He then requested the SIU to present. The chairperson, Ms. M. Semenya, who indicated that she would join the meeting later.
consideration and adoption of the agenda. The chairperson tabled the agenda of the day and invited members for its adoption. The agenda was adopted with amendments. Briefing by the Special Investigating Unit on Housing Matters, Advocate Mutubi, head of SIU, made a brief introductory remarks, and Ms. D. Hosheng made the presentation to the committee. The presentation covered the legislative mandate of the SIU, its vision and mission, consequence management, SIU strategic focus, the Limpopo HDA procurement process for temporary residence accommodation, three matters relating to the Eastern Cape, Mpumalanga, Free State, and Gauteng Department of Human Settlements, and a new allegation received. In his opening remarks, Advocate Mutobi indicated that all new allegations were under consideration, and he assured the committee that they would be speedily.
It's Advocate Mutobi.
Advocate Mutobi. Thank you very much, Honorable Masuta.
Yes. Okay, thanks, Honorable Masuta. Advocate Mutobi indicated that all new allegations were under consideration, and he assured the committee that they would speedily assess. He stated that it was very clear that there was a disregard for processes of procurement under national state of disaster. He further indicated that there was evidence that in some instances there was corruption and profiteering. The evidence also showed misrepresentation in various investigations, particularly in the Limpopo investigations. There was evidence of poor or incomplete service delivery. He assured the committee that service providers would face both litigation and criminal actions as consequence management measures. He indicated that some municipalities in the Eastern Cape agreed to terminate contracts due to irregular expenditure. This was to ensure that municipalities eliminate liabilities. The matter relating to asbestos was underway and the investigation was complete. The Hawks and the National Prosecuting Authority had taken the investigation to the High Court for civil recovery. There was delay in the Gauteng human settlement recovery process, which was instituted in 2018. This was due to delays in the High Court caused by other litigations. A special tribunal was then created by the president to avoid delays in the process. Deliberations. The portfolio committee welcomed the briefing by the SIU, the Department of Human Settlements, and the HDA. The committee raised the following issues relating to the presentation. A member indicated that he was the executive of the justice portfolio for 5 years and had first-hand experience with the SIU. He indicated that he was a reoccurrence of gross transgression in human settlement sector within all three spheres of government. Accountability was hampered because national government had no authority to take actions in other two spheres of government, which is province and local level. There was a disjuncture in the sense that a municipality can choose not to take action against their own councillors. In other spheres, procurement was done by officials, but at local government level, this was done by councillors. The issue with this was that councillors then get burdened by all kinds of small cases and sundry. He asked whether there was an alternative way to manage the volume of duties that the councillor were dealing with. This would ensure that impunity does not persist purely on the basis that it was not possible to round up all the thousands of construction all the way down to hundreds of municipalities where this issue take place. He asked what the disadvantage of this was. A member indicated that the committee hoped the department was listening to the unethical conduct that was done by administration unit. The department appoints people to do work for it and cannot abdicate their responsibility. They need to oversee that work. The issue was that the department had appointed an implementing structure, which is the HDA. A member asked if the department believed that the HDA had all the tools and was well structured to exercise its functions. The entity was meant to follow the principles of project management, and the department should ensure that this takes place. She asked how there was to be so many irregularities and corrupt activities by contractors. She said that accountability and protection of our people solely reside on the administration. She further said she was concerned about the issue raised by Advocate Masuta, that the national department had nothing to do with how local and provincial government behave. She was particularly concerned about funds which were sent to this sphere of governance for housing and how national government could not take them to task about any wrongdoing. She asked for clarity on this issue. She said this showed how bad the government was with the utilization of community funds. In his response, Advocate Mo TB indicated that at that time, the SIU mandate was to investigate state-owned entities. When the SIU investigated a particular state institution and irregularities were found, it looked for evidence as to who was accountable. If it was a procurement issue, which was most of the time, then the report would take the reader through what the investigators looked at, such as the procurement documents. That was how they were able to point to the BEC member and move up the chain of responsibility from there. When it came to project of the provincial at the provincial level, it is a similar process. For example, if the HDA conducts projects in the province, then an inquiry was made in the extent which the HDA have delegated. The legal position of delegation was that it does exonerate the person who was responsible for the delegation. And the HDA would be responsible for any irregularities. The principle of accountability points to specific process in a state institution. The accountability and follow through of the SIU's referrals remain a concern, particularly for disciplinary action. There was a further process to monitor the implementation of the SIU referrals at a presidency level. Any referrals that had not been acted on would then be revealed and action taken. There was a concerted effort at the presidency level to help ensure accountability. The presentation indicated
a number of findings against officials, such as 6 officials in Limpopo. Referrals for disciplinary actions had already been made. They needed to ensure that the follow-up and that the officials were held accountable. In case of irregularities, the SIU would begin the process to implement civil litigation. The information and evidence was prepared. External legal counsel would be appointed through the state attorney, and the legal counsel took the case to the special tribunal. The department or municipality was a core applicant so that they could be a part of the council in the contractors and recovery. Other parties that were cited as a respondent were the service providers and their directors. This ensured that there was a chance of recovering the funds when companies were liquidated. Sometimes companies were blacklisted and would liquidate, but their directors would end up in another company. This defeated the purpose and was why the SIU targets the directors as well. Preservation order were also done during the civil litigation process. A financial analysis would be done of an individual or a company, and where there was a legal basis, the assets would be preserved so that fund recovery was possible. Members asked if the SIU was going to recommend that consequence management be applied to officials who failed to do continuous monitoring of provinces and disregarded prescribed procurement processes. The committee had long advised the department to empower the HDA to do its work properly. The department promised that they were going to do so. If the department had done this, then there was still irregular expenditure due to them not doing their work effectively. Why does the department not take HDA to task? The member said the reason the HDA was a mess and was full of corruption was because of the failures of the committee to genuinely do its work and to engage in rigorous oversight of as per the constitution. She said the SIU was remarkable and acted with speed and professionalism. It was world class and stands out in South Africa, especially since so many of the oversight structures and police system were broken. On the issue of civil recoveries, she asked the SIU to outline how it was recovering the funds, especially when the contractors failed as a result of their contracts being halted. What was the SIU's view on the internal coordination committee of the HDA not finding any evidence of fraud that had been detailed by external audit for the financial year, in which much of the corruption outlined in the SIU report took place? Would the SIU consider reviewing the funding of the HDA and the corruption that its internal committee missed? If so, would this require a new proclamation? She was concerned that the HDA was not being audited by the Auditor General and that the internal committee did not have the requisite financial audit skills. In terms of the HDA's internal committee, the SIU would first
have to do their own investigation into what the function of the committee were and what they have condoned. If they had condoned any matter that falls under the current proclamation, they would be able to look at it. Often, these committees were created by acting, by accounting officers and assist them in making decisions. Ultimately, it remained the decision of the accounting officer. It would be submitted for a review by the SIU. If they were legal basis and fell under the under a proclamation, then they should be able to act on it. If it fell under outside of the proclamation, then they would amend it. This was signed off by the president. A member asked if the proclamation of R23 of 2020 was still active, as if it applies to de-densification during the pandemic. Out of 29 projects, 10 or 14 had not been completed, but the SIU had only reported 5 or 6. He asked if this proclamation was applicable to those unreported projects that had not been completed. In response, the report on proclamation R23 of 2020 had been submitted to the president, but they said in their report that if there were new allegations that came up, they were legally able to investigate them. A member asked how the SIU was dealing with the advance payment issues in the Free State and its take on the matter raised in the Zondo Commission implicating the department. In response, the SIU had an internal governance committee which interacted with the Zondo Commission on various issues. They were going through the report from the commission meticulously, and if any recommendation fell under a proclamation, they would be able to implement this recommendation. There was not enough information on the advanced payment issue in the Free State to present to the committee at this stage. Ms. S. Shabalala, Free State head of the SIU, said that she did not have enough information either. She would speak to the head of the investigation and let the committee know in writing. Members asked what national government's inability to control provincial local government meant for the SIU. Was the SIU able to give a clear recommendation to government about how to avoid this quagmire? Was it in the mandate? Advocate Mutidi said that at that time, the HDA was an agent of the department. The department was responsible for the HDA doing its work properly, and they should be proper witnessing and reporting mechanism. The SIU was able to recommend to the department when it had discovered weaknesses in the system. The assumption was that the HDA would have a legal instrument that regulates their service to the provinces, and there had to be an agreement between the department and the HDA for them to execute projects. The HDA should then be monitored accordingly. If the execution was substandard, then the HDA and the department should monitor this and implement changes. the SIU checked the legal framework and the procedures that had been put in place to monitor the project. Number five, briefing on status of the external audit action plan of 2020-21 by the HDA. Mr. M. Shangane, the Director General of the Department of Human Settlements, Dr. T. Rashid Tanga, HDA's chairperson, and Ms. D. Hoi Cheng, HDA acting CEO, made the presentation to the committee. The presentation covered the purpose and the background of the HDA, its overall status of action plan, plan's implementation, external audit findings, follow-up results, supply chain management, and the measures undertaken to deal with irregular expenditure. The Deputy Minister, P. Chwete, in her introductory remarks, stated that the HDA had come a long way over the past few months and that things were looking up. The entity was much more stable and was working tirelessly to improve efficiency. The process to appoint the CEO and the CFO had gone through cabinet. The external audit found that the HDA had weak internal control in supply chain management and project financing. The entity had been working hard to implement the recommended changes and made sure that the findings did not reoccur. 86% of the audit findings had been resolved, and this includes all supply chain findings and strict controls have been implemented. To manage irregular expenditure, the entity had established a condonation committee. Among other duties, it would facilitate and advise on action deemed appropriate and would look at individual cases based on merit. The committee would also check if everything is recovered. The findings that had not been implemented were those concerning the creditors with debit balances incorrectly classified as payables. There was a pending investigation into the inconsistencies. It would be solved soon. Ms. D. Ho-Cheng said that in the SIU report, there were recommendations for Dalana project. The first one was that after having paid two invoices of 2.5 million total, the HDA should no longer continue paying Avantino. The contract was valued at 15 million, but the last invoices paid were those two invoices and the contract was cancelled. The other recommendation was that they needed to place Avantino on the database of restricted suppliers to prohibit them from doing business with the state. This was a laborious process, but it had been done. This was done by the National Treasury after their submission, and they were waiting on confirmation. The SIU recommended that they should deal with three BEC and three BAC members. Two of the BEC members were no longer working for the organization, and a court case was active and could be heard on 24 June 22. It was recommended that actions be taken against BAC members for not detecting the fraudulent activities. The BAC member replied on the BAC report and did not do the due diligence that the SOU mentioned. One of the BAC member now only works for the HDA. The remaining two had been given warning letters and training so that if they were to be appointed to service on the BAC, they would not rely on report alone and request the actual documents. For Duncan Village, they only had a preliminary report. The SIU would say their report, which was shown to the committee with the HDA. A member said that the HDA's presentation was a tick box exercise. The acting CEO, acting CFO, and the board were not responsible for what the committee had been in terms of 2020 audit report. The submissions made by the office were scathing, but not personal, as they were directed to the entity. It seemed like there was some work being done to ensure some change after 3 years of request by the committee. However, the presentation given still did not touch on the depth and severity of the crisis that the entity had been in. It does not provide a level of detail that was fitting for Parliament in terms of external audit reports. There was clarity on wanton disregard for procurement processes, and there was a present concern by the SIU around the implementation of recommended remedial action. This had to be seen in light of her, as well as other members' repeated request to the chairperson during the COVID-19 crisis to conduct detailed oversight and to call the HDA and the then minister to account before the committee on procurement processes. She said these requests were not. Had the committee exercised the appropriate oversight at this time, and had they performed their constitutional function appropriately, a lot of the corruption could have been averted. It was appropriate at this stage, now that they had seen the culmination of this crisis, to remind the committee that during the hard lockdown, Minister Sisulu or the board of the HDA was not summoned to appear before the committee and to account for the CEO's hiring and firing. The appointment and dissolution of the board and the COVID-19 procurement processes that they knew were open to corruption. This served as an important reminder that when an MP submits a request to the chairperson on the basis of corruption suspicion and wanted to hold a minister or an entity accountable, they must do so at the time. They should not wait for 2 years after the fact and then see the materialization of corruption. She said the audit findings were very severe. The HDA had received a qualified audit opinion with matters of emphasis for 2019, 2020, 2021. They did not have adequate measures in place to maintain record of project obligations. These obligations were misstated. The auditor was unable to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence for project obligation, irregular and fruitless expenditure reached 147 million by the 2021 financial year. Supply chain management processes were not effectively maintained. Internal controls and required prescripts for supply chain management was not complied with. The entity did not have adequate systems in place for identifying or recording irregular expenditure. Financial statements that were submitted were not supported by record and material misstatement in audit reports were identified. The audit report said that, open quote, appropriate steps were not taken by those responsible, close quote, such as the accounting authority and the executive authority to prevent irregular expenditure, which by the end of the financial year had reached 147 million. There was negligent non-adherence to the PFMA and treasury regulations. At the same time, then Minister Lindiwe Sisulu was shuffling everyone in the upper echelons of the HDA. For example, the CEO was hired, fired, and then acted as a board chairperson. The board itself was dissolved and people were hired and fired. This was not withstanding the scathing finding of the SIU that regard a number of contracts managed by the HDA, findings of which indicated blame against these same officials. In South Africa, consequence management seemed to be lacking. She said the country had some good laws, and the Public Finance Management Act provided Parliament and members of the public with tools to find officials accountable. Section 65B of the PFMA requires that an executive authority, such as a minister, which is responsible for a department or an entity, to table in their NA the findings of a disciplinary board and any sanctions that have been imposed by that board, which has had a case of financial misconduct against an accounting officer or an accounting authority. Ms. Powell had written to the HDA saying that they haven't received a Section 65 report. The minister fired the board and the CEO, and yet they had not seen any result from a disciplinary hearing. She was told by the HDA that no such Section 65B of the PFMA exists, despite all of the hiring and firing. Section 83 of the PFMA deals with mismanagement of an accounting authority and officials of public entities. It states that the accounting authority for a public entity commits an act of financial misconduct if that accounting authority willfully or negligently fails to comply with a number of PFMA requirements, makes or permits an irregular or fruitless or wasteful expenditure. If the accounting authority is on a board, the Act says that each and every member is liable. The HDA had told the committee that they have established
an internal coordination committee to deal with all irregular expenditure that dates back from 2016 up to 2022, and that the result did not show any fraudulent activity. This doesn't reconcile with even the most preliminary finding of the SIU. The BAC is a primary example. The committee was told that that BAC officials were arrested in 2020, and there is criminal culpability that points to fraud and corruption. This does not reconcile with the findings presented by the HDA. How is this finding possible given the number of HDA officials that were arrested in relation to Talana hostel issue? Some of the BAC members were given training and a warning letter. Are these the same officials that were arrested and charged by the NPA? What was the acting CEO's view on the findings of the SIU and the HDA not aligning? What was the mandate of the coordination committee? And can the members please be provided with the composition and the terms of reference of the committee? What was the mandate of the external professionals employed by the HDA to perform functions related to the assessment of irregular expenditure? Do these experts have forensic audit experience? She said when one was complying with the auditor general or external audit recommendation, it was always a tick box exercise. Had there been a deep dive into the forensic component of this wasteful expenditure? Was there a forensic audit or investigation being done? What investigations was the HDA conducting into the activities of the previous board, CEOs, and the BAC members? She said that she did not want to make this political, but they released a number of media statements about who those people were, who their connections were, and why they had been hired and fired. Are there any investigations going on into what happened there? How many officials had the HDA or the coordination committee recommended for criminal investigation? Given the findings of the SIU, it would be assumed that there was gross negligence.
Chairperson, apologies. I think Member Powell is taking us for a ride now. We are also facing load shedding, and now our batteries are dying on something that we could have dealt with long time. I'm not sure whether country allows Sabelo just to talk 2 minutes and close it. I'm losing the battery now.
And we're not going to have a quorum if we can lose you, Honorable Zeke.
I support Honorable Seki's request that Sabelo does a small conclusion. I didn't realize these minutes were 17 pages.
Okay. Sabelo?
Yes, Chair. Okay, so I think it was clear on what was going on the part that I read. I'm just gonna go to the closing remarks by the Deputy Minister. Deputy Minister,
the response of the HDA.
Yes, Chair.
talk to them if you can.
In response, Dr. Rachitanga said the HDA was very serious about dealing with matters. The SIU did not find that there was a lack of cooperation with their investigations. They were cooperating with the SIU so that they can get to the bottom of this matter and do not wish for any more irregular expenditure. These cases were in the minority when compared to the other contracts that the HDA is involved in. The board did not want these cases to happen because they want the public to have confidence that their resources have been placed in an institution that looks after them and is law-abiding. They regret that there are those few instances of irregular expenditure in the vast amount of HDA projects. The HDA's ultimate ambition was not to have any qualified audit because the prescripts of the law were clear as to how these matters should be dealt with. Consequence management actions were taken against some of the officials involved. The matters of the SIU are still in court, and the outcomes of these processes would be very helpful and will be watched closely. The HDA asked for time to thoroughly engage with the SIU report. They only received the report when it was presented in the meeting. Once they received it officially, they would scrutinize it very closely to make sure that the recommendations are implemented and that there are no reoccurrences. Consequence management is not limited to employees of the organization. The HDA worked with service providers, and it was important that then they see a trend of poor quality of work or misrepresentation by the provider. Consequence management is also undertaken. The contractors were often terminated. There was also a clause of retention that governs their relationship with contractors. This means that the HDA would retain payments if the contractors were not doing their jobs properly. Consequence management did not only apply. Consequence management did not only end with employees of the agency, but also the service providers. So that is the response by the HDA chairperson. In summary, and then the closing remarks by the Deputy Minister, she noted and appreciated the compliments towards the current board and executive team. While there was still a lot to be done, it was important to give credit where it's due. The SIU presentation was very informative and painted an unfortunate picture about what had been happening behind the scenes. It was crucial and beneficial for the current leadership of the HDA to be exposed to the gravity of the work that lays ahead of them. No stones would be left unturned. Those who took advantage of poor South Africans will be made accountable for their actions. She was happy to hear, that there are HDA officials that are in court. She saw in the newspaper that two of these officials were
refuse bail. This is a good thing and will teach people people lessons. I think this this sums up the response of the deputy minister chair. And then the chairperson thanked Honorable Malachi for leading the meeting and the SIU and the department for their reports. And with regard to the resolution, so based on the presentation, the committee resolved on the following. Ms. S. Shabalala would liaise with the head of SIU in the Free State on the advanced payment issue in the Free State and would report back to the committee in writing. In terms of reference of the coordination committee, the terms of reference of the coordination committee were established in relation to irregular expenditure framework that was approved by the board, and this information and the composition of the committee will be sent to members. I think that's it, Chairperson, for the meeting adjourned at 1.
Okay, that's the minutes. Honorable members. That is the result of when a person taking minutes write each sentence of what members are saying. So, and we acknowledge that this was the intent. So that's why the minutes is so long. Can we get the mover for the adoption of the minutes? There was a people who said they were part of the meeting, Dr. Kumalo, and Dr. Kumalo indicated on the chat that was part of the meeting. The name must be added. Honorable Mokoto.
Chairperson, before we move for the adoption, can I please make a request that Sabelo resend these minutes to us?
But the minutes cannot be resent before it gets adopted, Honorable Member. It must be adopted, then will be sent to you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Honorable Powell. Oh, sorry, Honorable Powell, Honorable Doctor, sorry.
Chair.
You'll follow Honorable Powell.
Thanks, Chair. I just want to make a
Honorable Kumalo, I said you'll follow Honorable Powell.
Oh, okay. My apologies. Chair, your response to Honorable Mokoto now that the minutes can't be sent before they're approved, I think that we do usually get draft minutes that are sent to us to read before the meeting. So, I mean, we can't approve.
You had the copy, Honorable Member.
Yes.
These minutes, yes, you had the copy. So I'm saying, and because he says before we adopt, let the minutes be sent to us. I'm saying, let's adopt the minutes and then we'll send it to you, Honorable Mokoto, because we had sent these minutes several times to members.
Yes, correct.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Well, then once the committee is ready, I'm happy to move for the adoption.
Honorable Paul, move for the adoption. Honorable Kumalo.
Thanks, Chair. I wanted to just make a request, Chair. I don't know, I have a bit of a concern with the minutes and the accuracy, because ever since I joined the committee, I think the accuracy around my attendance, if you look at that, is probably two meetings that I've attended since I joined the committee, and that's not true. And every other time that we do a few meetings, I have a minute, I have to, you know, make these amendments. I don't know if it's a copy and paste exercise that's happening here, but can I just request the Secretariat to please pay a little bit more attention. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Doctor. And the time you are raising the matter, I've indicated to the staff that these things impact on members, on the tax returns. Their parties would then have a problem that they are not attending. Please, let's pay attention on that, or we must change the system that we are using and put all members so that you don't have to add one in all the time because you'll forget. Can we get the seconder for the adoption of the minutes?
Seconded, Chair.
Honorable Zeki, seconded. Thank you very much. The minutes have been accepted. Can we then proceed to the next item?
Chair, is there no? I thought usually after the minutes are adopted, the next item is much as arising. If there is.
No, we've not put that on the agenda, but you can raise that, Honorable Masuta, but it's not on the agenda because the processes that we follow, Honorable Masuta, for members to adopt the agenda is for us to put things that we wanted them to appear. But I sympathize with your request because of these minutes have been to and from, and the members might have lost the gist of what was happening in the meeting. You can ask the full.
Yes.
Matters are
right. No. I have no problem with the content of the minutes. But I was simply saying that to be useful, they should be for.
Can I request that those that are opening the mics, they must mute so that we hear what
issues
Mike,
that
Honorable Mike.
Forward.
We couldn't get you, Honorable.
Yes. No. I was saying the item matters arise and aid us to elevate the which take.
Who can hear you, Honorable Masuta? Honorable Masuta,
because otherwise minutes just become a formality. It's like a report.
Honorable Masuta, we can't hear you.
You can't hear me.
Yes, that is the problem.
You can't hear me still. Hello? Can you still not hear me?
Now we hear you, but when you start
to speak, can hear me.
We can hear you now when you say, can you hear me? When you start to speak, then your line becomes faint and there's a lot of noise around it. Honorable Masuta?
Yes, Chair.
Your line is bad.
I think
very bad.
This network, are you hearing me? Are you hearing me now, Chair? there's some witch from this committee to find the Sangoma in Limpopo, because I don't think I'll find one in Gauteng. Are you still hearing me?
No.
Are you still not hearing me?
No, we can, but as I'm saying, when you say, are you hearing me? We hear you. Immediately when you start to speak, the line goes otherwise. So.
And I lit inside my mouth of the phone, but it looks like that doesn't help either.
Can you write it on the chat, Honorable Masuta?
I think it's already passed to the next item.
Okay, it's getting
it's
worse now. We
can't, for me to participate.
We can't hear anything that Member Masuta is saying.
That's why I'm saying if you can write.
I'm saying let the meeting continue.
Okay, thank you. But
I'll let go.
No, Honorable Masuta, are you able to write on the chat?
Yes, Chair, but
write what you are trying to raise on the chat, and then we can come back to it.
Can
we then proceed then? Honorable Masuta, I'm afraid we will have to close you, because the sitting today starts at 2:00. Can we allow Sabelo to present the last item and then you write it on the chat group?
Meeting, go ahead.
Okay, thank you, Comrade Mashi.
I'll see what I can do. Yes, please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Sabelo?
Yes, Chair. Okay, so honorable members, greetings once again. This is the 2019-2024 strat plan for the Portfolio Committee on Human Settlements. With regards to the table of content, it covers the vision, the mission and values, mandate and the parliament strategic goals and the situational analysis. Honorable Chair, with your permission, I'm not going to go through the narrative of the situational analysis and the parliament strategic goal. I'm just going to give a summary, considering time. Now, with regards to the vision of Parliament, is that we want to create or improve the quality of life of all South Africans. And how do we get there? That is the mission, is by ensuring that the appropriate laws are passed and executed by the executive authority. And with the values is openness, responsiveness, accountability, trust, teamwork, professionalism, and integrity. Now, the mandate of the committee is to ensure a basic human right enshrined in the constitution, which is to ensure access to adequate housing by all South Africans, and this means that the state should take reasonable actions to make sure that right is realized. Now, the mandate of the committee is to make sure that happens. And this is done by considering, amending, and passing relevant and appropriate legislation, ensuring that the organs of states, they account to the committee, and the committee can summon anyone or any organization to come and produce documents or evidence on certain issues. Now, the department obviously is working under the white paper, the housing policy and strategy for South Africa. And the second section describes the rules of National Assembly again, which is to exercise oversight over the executive and to ensure that any policy that is called to the committee respond to the committee, and also monitor the monitor and investigate and make recommendations relating to budget, legislative programs, and so on and so forth. And then, so the implementation of the housing white paper or the housing act is done through the housing code, and this gives the guideline in relation to that. And then the section that took the following section on the provincial local imperatives relating to the provision of human settlements. This section acknowledges that housing is a concurrent function, and therefore there needs to be cooperation between national, provincial, and local authorities. And then the following section outlines the legislation that is relevant for human settlements, and most importantly would be the Public Finance Management Act and other relevant legislation. And then how is this done? This is achieved by State of the Nation Address. This is by the strategic and performance plans and the MTSF and several reports, and also there's cooperation between South Africa and UN, and the primary stakeholders is the all department in the say in the social cluster, and the entities that are supporting the department, such as the HDA, NHFC, and most importantly, beneficiaries. And then also there are other stakeholders such as police when it comes to the issues of land invasions or evictions. And now, with regards to the policy priorities for Parliament, they are focused on inputs, activities, outputs and outcomes, and then impact. With regards to the impact, it's looking at a long-term desired outcome, and this is captured in the National Development Plan that the human settlement sector wants to achieve sustainable human settlements by 2030. With regards to the outcome, is that the committee or parliament should ensure accountability of the executive. The output is this would include bills, budget recommendations, and appointment recommendations, and all the other output that the committee proposes to the executive. And then with regards to the activities, this relates to the mandate of the committee, which is passing legislation, ensuring oversight of the executive, and ensuring public participation, and ensuring cooperative governance and international participation. Now, the input would be around the capacity that is given to members to exercise oversight, and this would include time for committee oversight, and ensuring that members, they've got capacity to ensure oversight and improvement on research and analysis that provides deeper insights. And again, ensuring public participation and petitions and submissions. Now, with regards to the situation now, analysis, it basically locates the parliament within the global context and the continental context and also the national context. So basically what it's saying is that the global economic activities also influence the work of parliament, and also if there are changes in the continental outlook, that will also influence the work of parliament. Socially, it is acknowledged that human settlement is affected by increased level of urbanization, and there's, to put it in quantitatively, that there's about 65% of the population to 70% is now living in urban areas. So when we are dealing with strategic objectives of the committee, that should be also taken, that should be considered. Also that the world now is living in the fourth industrial revolution, and most people are using the internet, and therefore that should also be considered in monitoring and evaluation of the executive. And also these things should be geared toward achieving the objectives that are set in the NDP in the chapter that deals with human settlements. Okay, so with regards to the strategic objectives of the committee, the strategic objective of the committee number one is to strengthen oversight and accountability. And how is that done? So the committee exercises oversight over the department, its entities, and implementing agents. To summarize that, it looks at the non-performance, the non-financial and the financial performance of the department. And to go to specifics, the committee monitors all the programs of the department. For instance, it monitors the priority development areas. It monitors the adequate housing is and improved quality of life is implemented. It monitors the spending of the department and entities, the business plans of the department, the national and provincial. And also, just recently, we know that there has been COVID-19. So the departments and entities were forced to plan around COVID-19. So that also needs to be monitored. The committee also monitors performance of the department quarterly. It monitors the business plans of national and provincial departments, the spending of the USDG, the HSDG in all provinces, the implementation of mega and catalytic projects, the district development plan, the finance linked individual subsidy program, the title deeds program, rectification, the release, let's say the acquisition and the release of well-located land and the housing demand database, the municipal capacity, the social and rental housing program, employment creation, and the mortgage default insurance scheme, the implementation of norms and standards, and the implementation of the qualification criteria. And recently, the minister has been speaking largely on the issue of unblocking blocked projects and also the eradication of mud houses. And then also of critical importance is the issue of involvement of women, youth and people with disability in the construction sector. So, honorable members, this is your document. If I'm leaving anything that requires to be monitored under strategic objective number one, then members can raise that. Now, strategic objective number two, which is strengthening in legislative capacity. So at this point, the committee considers legislation that is referred to it. And currently, we are waiting for the Human Settlements Development Bill. And we are currently working on the Housing Consumer Protection Bill. And we know that the department indicated some time ago that they'll be reviewing the Housing Act to Human Settlements Act, and that will also have influence on the housing code. It will have to change to accommodate aspects that will be covered in the Human Settlements Act, and then the Urban Development Policy. Number three is that the committee should participate in international best practices, activities, and the capacity building program. This is done firstly through by a study tour. The committee has to decide on an international trip in order to learn from other countries on how certain policies are implemented or how their human settlements how their human settlements look. And also there are other UN Habitat conferences that the committee participates in. And the fourth strategic objective is to strengthen cooperative governance, and this is by considering all reports by Chapter 9 institutions. We know that just before the BRRR, usually the AG comes and provides a report on the performance of the department in relation to the audit outcomes. And the South African Human Rights Commission, the Public Protector, the Commission on Gender Equity, and also the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation, and other institutions that would be relevant in a particular space. Ensuring participation, also this is facilitated, this is ensured by conducting public hearings on anticipated legislation, and also this depends on whether legislation has been tabled or referred to the committee, and also attending to petitions that are referred to the committee. So, honourable members, what I've said up there is covered in a table form in terms of financial years. So, when the department says that they will implement a particular priority development, a number of priority development areas. So in each financial year, the committee monitors the performance in relation to the promises that the department has made. I'm not going to go through all the indicators. I've read all the indicators in the above in this section. These are the indicators for exercising oversight over the department. So basically, the how is evidence gathered to ensure that the committee exercise oversight is through reports. And usually it's four quarterly reports that are given. With regards to strategic objective number two, which is strengthening legislative capacity, again, those legislations or bills that we're still waiting for, we are currently working on the Housing Consumer Protection Bill. And then number five, which is deepening the international participation or in the or international best practice and activities, and to augment the capacity of the committee. We haven't done the international study tour. Members need to decide on which country will best suit best practices and activities and capacity building for the committee. With regards to UN Habitat conferences, the committee has participated in one, and so the UN has every 2 years it has a conference. So with this with six parliament, we can also participate in the second UN. UN conference. Again, with ensuring integrated planning and in human settlements, as indicated, we receive reports from the Chapter 9 institutions, and that is influenced by the relevance of the report and also from the Department of Monitoring and Evaluation. With regard to strategic objective, which is number 4 or 5, this is about capacity development, and there has been a workshop conducted there needs to be a workshop that is conducted on the works of the Department of Human Settlements, and also earlier on. We had a workshop on the housing code. You remember when we were dealing with several projects several programs that are covered in the housing code, the qualification criteria, and also the subsidy quantum. The last strategic objective is to facilitate public participation in community processes, and this is also through public hearings for legislation and attending to petitions that are referred to the committee. And with regard to the risk, maybe just to give a brief explanation of what is meant by a risk in the context of strategic planning is the things that an entity foresees that there might be problems that affect the performance of the entity or the committee. So these risks were identified as follows: long meetings often discourage members from participating, and the mitigation factor that was proposed is time allocation will be determined by the chairperson. And the second risk is delays in the submission of presentation by the department, and the mitigation measure or the recommendation is deadline set by the chairperson for administration. And following the risk is insufficient time for the committee to give effect to its program, and the recommendation is request additional meeting in time for the committee when needed. And as you can see today, that this meeting was requested because additional program needed to be attended to. The following risk is inadequate attendance of committee meetings. So the mitigation measure there is party political whips to address the issue. And the last risk is changing of parliamentary program affecting committee program. So the mitigation factor here is engage with authorities in regards to the consistency between parliamentary program and committee program. Honorable Chair. So that is the 5-year plan, and I'm gonna, with your permission, I'm gonna go to the annual performance plan, the APP.
Okay. Can you just move it with Sabelo so that by 1 o'clock we are out here, because okay, the sitting starts at 2 this Wednesday.
Noted, Chapman. Okay, so this is the annual performance plan for 2022-23. So the difference between the 5-year plan and the annual plan is that the 5-year plan looks at the term of the committee or six parliament, and the APP looks at the yearly performance of the APP and of the committee. Now, this is, the performance is divided into quarters, and the financial quarters in the financial year, which are divided into four quarters. With regards to legislation, we are now working on the Housing Consumer Protection Bill, and this bill, the annual target is that bill will be referred to Parliament this financial year, and then next year they will be waiting for that bill, and the committee will take it from there. The human settlements legislation, we're also waiting for that to be referred to the committee, and also that will affect the housing code. With regards to the oversight of the department and its entities, the baseline is 4 reports, and therefore in all those things that we monitoring, quarterly reports will be used as portfolio of evidence. Okay, so with regards to participating in international best practices, the indicator will be a study tour, one study tour. So this study tour will be done either in the second or third quarter of the next financial year. And also, as I've indicated, that the World Urban Forum has 2 conferences in the time of the committee. So we've attended the first one, and then the second one will be attended as soon as it's announced. The public hearings, there are public hearings in every quarter, and also the attendance of petition, attending to petitions, their quarterly progress reports, and also the capacity development. We're anticipating to have 1 human settlements course for members, and also with regards to the housing code workshop, we are anticipating to also have 1. With regards to the strategic objective of strengthening cooperative governance, we are looking to have the baseline there is AG annual report, and we are looking to have 1 annual report in the fourth quarter, and also 1 report on the Department of Performance and Monitoring in the fourth quarter. Honorable members, this was a presentation of the five-year plan and also the APP. And I will now give it back to the chairperson.
Thank you very much, Sabelo. Maybe you're supposed to start to say by saying that the strict plan that we had when we were still human settlement, water and sanitation, now we have to have the strict plan as a human settlement only.
Yes, Chair.
Okay. Can I get the input from members on the APP and the strategic plan, which is the copycat of that we had in the, at the beginning of the term, but just isolating issues of human settlement, because we cannot develop a threat plan towards the end of the term. We are still implementing that threat plan. We can only review it if there are certain things that need to be reviewed. Can I get the members to talk to the issue? There is nothing. I don't see any hands. Can I get members to, before get members to move to the adoption, Sabelo, on the risk number one, the chair does not have powers to allocate time for the meeting. The meeting is allocated by the programming committee.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so you should change that. The second issue is on the, I think the housing in Daba is annual. It should be part of the APP. The other issues on the strengthening the relationship. If we can see how we can strengthen our relationship with legislatures, because majority of the time, things that we are dealing with it was supposed to be dealt by provinces, and they end up arising here in national, because maybe we don't have a relationship. Like when we had an oversight, how can we make sure that they continue overseeing those issues that we might have found with provinces, so that if we strengthen our relations with the provincial legislatures. Can I then get the mover for the adoption of the strike plan and the APP? I'm waiting for hands, members.
Chair, it's Honourable Powell. I've listened to everything that Mr. Bello has said. I'm not going to move right now because I would just like an opportunity to actually read it in a little bit more detail myself, given the timing of this meeting. So I am here and I have listened, but before maybe someone else can move, I would personally like more time to read it in more detail. Thanks, Chair.
Okay. Honourable Teki. Honourable Teki.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Chair, I think at some stage you need to practicalize the plan. Because sometimes I just see that we are moving in response to what the department says, not necessarily based on the mandate of the committee. So I would say maybe we could have another time to have a critical debate, identify a few issues. One of them is this one of lawmaking. I think lawmaking, which it's not about waiting for the bills that are brought to us. We as the committee, we can initiate laws or bills. So it's not for us to wait, but we have the mandate as well to introduce. Like the law that I think in my 2019, I requested the engagement on the Evictions Act, the PIE Act, which is the conjugation. PIE stands for
Prevention of Illegal Eviction from Unlawful Occupation.
Thank you. Prevention of Illegal Evictions. Yeah. I think that's an act that I thought we need to do some serious amendments as initiated by us. The other issue, Chair, is this capacity building. Maybe one day, Chair, you can invite a learned person in relation to human settlement. Maybe spend an hour with us, talking to us about the same issues of evictions, like the people from Rebosa, like the people from other institutions that may not be of state, to give us some 30-minute presentation and engage with us for an hour, just to build that capacity and see the other sides that we may not have seen. So we can leave that to you, Chair, and work on it. Thank you. I do adopt, I think Member Powell says she was still wants to read it. I do adopt with those few points for action. Thank you.
Okay, I think it should be, thank you, Honorable Sek. It should be added, engagement with the stakeholders. You'd remember when we're still human settlement on water, we were targeting Fridays to engage with the stakeholders, particularly because we believed that the time that allocated to us as a committee was not sufficient to deal with the issues of human settlement and water at the same time. Honorable Powell, I think Sabelo must add to the issues that you raised.
Yes,
thanks. I had written in the chat that I support Honorable Teki's recommendation for an in-depth and a critical engagement on this plan in light of a number of issues that it doesn't currently cover, which is why I had said that I would personally like a little bit more time to engage with the plan. And because of the timing of this meeting, I don't think many of us have really had that time. On the issue of the Prevention of Illegal Evictions Act, the Democratic Alliance has currently got a private member's amendment bill to the Prevention of Illegal Eviction from Unlawful Occupation Act out in the Government Gazette that will be tabled before this committee in line with the rules of Parliament and official parliamentary processes as soon as the legislative unit for Parliament deems that appropriate. It is out for public comment at the moment. It is one of the reasons that I have been so insistent, as Honourable Tiki has supported, that this committee engage around the issue of evictions, land invasions, and the current limitations of the existing Act. And I think that it's something that's come up in almost every single meeting with all role players, from entities to provinces to municipalities. And the National Department has made it very clear that there is no current legislative amendments in the pipeline. So I thoroughly support what Honourable Tseke has said in light of the fact that this committee can itself make recommendations and initiate legislation. So I think that we need to definitely add that to the plan. I don't know if other colleagues have been able to thoroughly engage this afternoon with what Sabelo has presented, given load shedding across the country and the timing. So, I mean, I would personally support, I know that timing is limited, but I would personally support a somewhat more thorough engagement around this with a view to further input. But those can also be made in writing, I suppose, if we don't have time for a formal deliberation this term. Thanks, Chair.
Sorry. One of the things is that our plan, we're a committee, our plan needs to be submitted as to the parliamentary processes so that it gets engaged. Actually, I wanted it to be done in a manner that we would sit down ourselves and start from the beginning and dealing with the constitution and our mandate and all those things. But because these things has to be actually our input into the system of parliament, and maybe just to say that we have to adopt and forward our input so that tomorrow, because one of the problems has been that some of the things we wanted to do, which are not planned, and you are unable to argue with the authorities that, but these things you have agreed with our plan as presented, because adoption ourselves, it doesn't mean that it, because it's going to be integrated within the committee sections, we're all looking at the entire budget, and because the APPs must be costed and the APP and the strat plan has to be costed, and this will be our input into the system of parliament. Just to say that I think we will add the issue of the proposal of Honourable Tseke, seconded by yourself on the eviction, how do you call it? The Eviction Act and the amendment to strengthen it, and as one of the legislation that as a committee, because that's what Tseke proposed, we must deal with. And how we'll deal with that, members can then decide on that. Because one of the things that I must indicate to members is that the rules talks about the committee and the chair. The responsibilities to preside over the committee, implement the decisions of the committee, not of individuals or anything that I do as chair. It must have been agreed by the committee. That's why we bring the program to yourself. That's why we bring we adopt the agenda. And members has to understand that process. Our chair does not deal with individual. We bring proposals, of course, because we've got the support staff. We give the proposal to members, and members, when you adopt those things, we are obliged as the chair to make sure that gets implemented. But not individual things that people just wake up in the morning and write me letters and
and say, this is what should happen. I don't do that. I don't have that mandate. The mandate that I have is to preside over the committee and implement, make sure that the implementation of the committee reports and the House report. So I just thought I must even clear that this part, because sometimes you find that people think that I can take a decision, but I must come and present an account on the decision that I've taken to the committee. I don't have those absolute powers as an individual chair. So I just wanted to indicate that. So we'll then ask members if there's anything that you think out of what Sabelo has presented and we have amended are not captured, and you want it to be, you can then write to the secretary of the committee, which will then to be corrected because we are going to deal with this APP, you might find that there is a typing error, there is the English, there is this and that, which as we are going to engage with this with the APP, we might actually try to add on some of those things. Thank you very much, honorable members. With that note, if there is nothing, I want to propose closure on the meeting. The meeting is adjourned. Thank you very much.